Hello, Emily Wright.
Hi, Sam McClary.
How are you today?
I'm good. I've learned a lot about this recording studio today.
I've learned
about Phantom. Well, no, I mean, I learned there's a thing called Phantom. I don't know what it does. So
Phantom.
Phantom. I learned that someone's been in here and has violently pressed the buttons on the mixer. Wasn't me.
It wasn't me. Nor was it Shaggy.
Oh, that was great. That was teed up perfectly.
Well, there's a lot of new things going on at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah.
New things that we're learning and new things that we're delivering.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when people go to the website to look for us, they might see something new.
I hope they do, otherwise there's been a glitch in the system.
Yeah, they won't see three letters that they used to see. They will see Radius Data Exchange.
It's exciting.
Because after a few years of development and talking to the industry, we've launched Radius Data Exchange. And I must say, I think it looks pretty cool.
It does look cool.
Have you had a little play with it yet?
I don't know how you want me to answer that.
And with Radius Data Exchange.
Yeah, well, we've been playing with it for months, haven't we? yes, no, I have. And it's been great from this side as well. I've kind of had a bit of the benefit of, you know, access all areas to see as it's developed, particularly over the last few months. And it is, you know, I can only imagine what it feels like for the developers and the team that have been working on it. Because just from our perspective of seeing, you know, bits here and there and having demonstrations, it seems like it's been a long time coming. So
yeah.
It's awesome.
And we should give a little shout out to the tech team that isn't us. The tech team that actually does techie things.
The tech team that doesn't break their phone screen in the middle of conferences, yeah.
Absolutely. Which did develop, build and release on time Radius Data Exchange. And for those of you that haven't seen it, do go to www.egi.co.uk/RadiusDX and you can have a play.
Oh, I was going to say, and you can have a play, but you said it first.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But yeah, I'm sure people will.
So that's one new thing this week. Number two new thing is a new tech talk radio podcast.
Oh, I wonder where you were going. I was thinking, what else has happened?
Oh.
Yes, new tech talk radio podcast with Tripti Aria from Travtus. Tripti is a bit of a legend. I saw her speaking at the KPMG PropTech meetup back in January now. And thought, oh, she knows what she's talking about. She's got such great presence. We should get her on here for a podcast. And I'm so glad that we made it happen. So Tripti has worked in Mumbai. She was based out of Singapore for a while, working in the construction sector. Basically, the idea of it is that you have a digital operations manager. So when you currently sort of have somebody that you need to give instructions to, they have those instructions. And then when they leave or move on, you've got to start all over again. Her idea is to digitize that so that there is a consistent, you know, digital AI operations manager for your building or portfolio, and you can just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it, and that person will never leave, which sounds a bit sinister. But she's great, and she's great for lots of reasons. She's brilliant to talk on the tech side of things, but she's also fantastic, and you'll listen to her in a minute, in terms of her thoughts on gender in tech and property, not least because she comes at it from a very different angle and a very honest angle. So her digital operations manager is called Adam, and she says, as you'll hear, there must have been a reason I decided to call it Adam. And she said, if I'm being honest, I think people in the construction sector, whether we like it or not, are more likely to listen to an Adam than an Eve. And for someone she's a very, you know, ambitious, powerful woman who's been in construction for most of her career, to admit that, it's really cool. And I think it comes at it from a very different angle.
It is really cool, isn't it? But I think it's also part of that, the story that we have to swallow a bit on the whole sort of gender diversity issue, that none of this stuff changes overnight. Mm. You know, there was Adam and Eve, if you read that book. There are others if you read other books. And, you know, there is historically that that male figure, isn't there, that's the authority figure, and it is changing, but it's not going to change overnight. And I think having a woman say say, oh, you know, I made him Adam, not Eve.
Mm.
Goes to show that, you know, even those of us that want it to be Eve can't change it overnight.
Yeah.
Because it's just somewhere within us.
And the other good thing that she says, which is, again, well worth listening to the podcast just for this, really, although everything she says about Travitas is also great, she talks about data. I mean, obviously, what she's doing, like so many startups and platforms and software systems, relies on data. And she said the thing about data is that it removes the alpha, and that is really interesting. And I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and at least now they are looking at the data, aren't they, and seeing that more of it means better decisions. Yeah. And you know, like many people that we've talked to, either here in this room or outside of this room, when we've been doing other stuff, that the data will give you the answer, but you do need the human element too. Mm. You still need that those relationships, and you still need a little bit of that sort of human interpretation, I suppose. But we'll see what happens in the future.
We will. And in the near future, let's listen to what Tripti had to say. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Yes, very well, thank you. We've mastered the microphones. Honestly, these microphones get more and more high-tech every time I come into this room. So thank you so much for joining me today. First saw you in a non-stalkerish way, actually, because we didn't meet, at KPMG PropTech Evening, which was a while ago now.
Yes.
So it's taken us a while to get you in here, but now we have. Tell us about Travitas.
Travitas is my baby. Well, Travitas is a company that started off actually as a construction company. We were based out of Singapore up to almost 6 months ago. And 5 years ago, I started the company in order to run contracts. And in order to be more efficient, we started developing technology, recognized the scalability of technology, and decided to pivot ourselves just towards focusing on that and automating work orders, projects, and other in-field operations, really, by using technology. And 5 years later now, we are a tech startup, which I think is surprising to even myself sometimes, and hence now based in London.
And what's your background? So how long were you in? You were in Singapore first, and then moved over.
I'm the typical immigrant story, I guess. I grew up in India, and then went to the US to study. Got an education there. Got some work experience in New York. Post which I was working actually in Mumbai. So basically, I'm trained as an architect. That's mm-hmm. what I was studying. Worked in real estate private equity in Mumbai, developed some buildings. And then after that, went back to the US for further education to qualify myself to be beyond just an architect. So I got that, you know, ubiquitous MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, ended up in Singapore for 5 years. So I've been a bit around the place, and now decided that probably literally living on GMT would make life easier. So here we are.
You do live on the pretty much on the line.
Yeah, I think we're a few degrees away from the line on the west side. So I'm still in the Western Hemisphere.
And you said that you have become a tech startup. Tell me what that's like. You know, lots of people sort of set out to be a tech startup, and it feels like your kind of journey has been more of an evolution.
Yeah, I think it was an evolution that had to happen. We just were waiting so long for solutions to come out in our industry, and ideally, I think I would have still been doing this if that solution had come out already.
Mm.
But there's just so many intricacies which are linked so much to domain knowledge that with my co-founder, who has a very tech background, and I have a very real estate background, when we started working closely, we really recognized that it's not often that those two domain knowledges come together, and that's probably why we haven't seen those solutions come through. Moreover, we were also noticing some of the startups that were coming out with solutions, they didn't have the vision to look at it holistically as an ecosystem. They were looking at it as a product.
Mm.
And I think even now, of course, we are a product and we're very early, But our intent for Traftus, or for our product, which is Adam, is the vision is much larger. And I think that's what really drove us to building it as a separate business, as something that wasn't just to add on to construction. It required us to give it our complete and full attention. And thus, in the startup world, it's called a pivot. In the old school entrepreneur way, we just started fresh.
And if you were going to explain Traftus to somebody in the simplest of forms, how would you put it? I mean, I've seen you pitch and describe it on stage with some excellent slides, and you were very funny and, you know, put it in a way that was so easy to understand. I will challenge you to try and do something similar with no slides and no live audience.
Sure. Well, Traftus right now has built a product called Adam, and Adam is the life and soul of the company. Adam is a digital property manager, and he talks and he texts and he schedules. And
is Adam the person I confuse with Bob?
Bob is who I used to be. Let's go back to the Adam and Bob analogy. I think that's probably a good one. So there's something that we need to understand about properties. Properties always started off as individual enterprise. It's always been somebody comes in, he buys a property, usually with extra money that they need to invest. And of course, now we're at a stage where that somebody's become big pension funds. So in general, the industry or real estate itself has scaled. But the way that it's managed hasn't. So even in companies of large scale, you still have individual property managers, construction managers, good old-fashioned ops guys who are kind of the data mart of the company. What they really have is they're holding all of this information, which we call experience, with regards to what is the scope of work, how long does a job take, what materials does it require. I don't think there's any real database where you go out there and say, I need to paint my wall and at the same time strip out my floors. What does that mean in terms of time and material? It always requires you to go out to someone mm-hmm. who gives you a bid. And this is my background. I was a contractor. So I was that guy. And instead of taking great pride in the fact that I knew so much about the industry and saying I can tell on the top of my head how much that should cost, we really started thinking why I could have that knowledge. There must be a reason why that comes so naturally. And it's just how our brains process data. And our brains process data in a way that it starts making relations. Mm-hmm. It understands that certain, and language is a large part of how we understand data. So when you say that you would like me to unclog a sink, or if you say my sink is blocked, both those situations represent the same thing, where you're basically describing the fact that there is a problem with your sink where the water isn't going down. Mm-hmm. And the first step is the human brain puts that together in the multiple different ways that you've been saying it. That is what we call natural language processing in the tech world. Once you do that, then the next step is, well, if I've understood what the scope of work is, what are the components that are part of it in order to get it executed? This is where good old-fashioned contractors come in and say, well, last time I did that, it took me an hour. But now that I've done this 20 times, I can think that it should take me about 45 minutes. And most of that is what we call experience, but actually it's, again, data processing. You've just gone through that much data in your brain in order to be able to process it very quickly and come up with an estimate. And similarly, when you look at something and say, well, what parts do I need in order to repair this? It's similar. I've done it 5 times. These are the different things that are attached to it. And this is how we're going to, how we think we're going to diagnose it. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar to, I guess, you know, when you even do diagnosis for health. Mm. Buildings are the same. I mean, there was a client of ours who used to actually call me the building doctor, because every time I would walk in and he'd say, I don't understand why this is creaking. And I'd give him 3 options as to why. But that's exactly what we wanted to build out into a system, so that it's not stuck in each individual person. And that's what Adam does. So the analogy of Bob was basically that one person in your organization, or your 2 persons or your 3 persons who have this information, but it always stays with them. And then there's always the problem of training and getting new people in who are of the same quality, because we don't collect that data. But now with Adam, who's basically this digital property manager, he's your assistant in your property management operations. He's your assistant who's accepting this information and learning every day. So imagine an intern who's imbibing all of that experience really quickly and is moving his way up towards being an operations manager really, really fast. That's Adam.
Mm. Wow. So So in terms of, you know, Adam then, that data, and it, you know, it gets kept and it gets built on. And then how is this message being sort of verbalized to the industry, and what's the reaction been so far?
I think a very large part of our role as startups in general is to educate the industry. Very often when we go in, people are expecting a chatbot. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to explain the difference between a chat interface and a chat AI bot, because the difference is an interface is how you interact, whereas artificial intelligence means it's taking decisions, it's automating, as well as being able to look at preferences, because it's how you're processing that data. Mm. We definitely find it challenging sometimes to have that conversation. And we do like to, in fact, work with, you know, other organizations who can help dissipate that information. Mm. Because it's literally a matter of re-educating an industry which is so used to doing things the old-fashioned way. Mm. That the basics of tech, which sometimes at least the tech world takes for granted, doesn't make any sense. The best way for us to do it is actually to make it easily relatable. And this is where I think the marriage of the operationals background as well as a tech background comes together. Over the last 3 years, I have learned a lot about tech simply because we've had to build it. And similarly, my co-founder has learned so much about real estate, even though he's a techie. So between us, we've seen that you know, knowledge flow happen, and we now want to do the same with our clients. So what we really focus on is saying, we don't want to be a vendor. We want to be your innovation partner, because what we can bring to the table is to help look at what we do on a daily basis from a slightly different perspective. And you'll get mixed reactions to that. We've seen some clients really accept that. You also see some who are just kind of waiting to see if others will. I think that this is an industry which has a large set of followers. However, you just need a few vanguards. And once you've seen those vanguards really hit the ground running, the followers come in pretty quickly. The only problem is the guys who are going to follow on, even though they think they're safer, it means somebody else has a head start.
Yeah, a bit late to the party.
Yeah, and that will happen. I do believe that the industry needs to start looking at R&D in a more serious way.
And I'm interested to talk to you a little bit about competition as well, because the PropTech/tech sphere, you know, I think the PropTech name is, I'm not sure how long that's going to be around actually, as everything just becomes tech. But the you know, the tech space is becoming very crowded, and particularly crowded when it comes to sorts of, you know, property management and portfolio management systems. Mm-hmm. So what is it that sets you apart, and how do you see yourself on a plane with the competition?
We actually don't look at the competition much in general. The reason for that is because we're so focused on just building the digital property manager. Everything else is a step towards it. Mm-hmm. So if today we are if we're a work order management system, we still don't see ourselves as a work order management system, though it is the honest truth. It's just an AI-driven one. And then tomorrow, when we build in more features, we will see ourselves as a property management system. But that's still not how we see ourselves, because constantly we're looking at our vision, and that is to build a digital property manager. We want to be able to manage a property end-to-end, automated, where the role of the human does come to a point where you're really dealing with real issues, where you're really bringing in the service that your tenants need when they need it, not for the mundane. So if you really think about it from that perspective, we think of it as stages. We're like, today we have to answer questions about these competitors. 3 months from now, those competitors will change because of the traction or the projection that we have towards the business. So I don't think it's about staying in your shell or anything like that. We're very well aware of what others are doing. But what's really important about competition is to always know that you are always your own competition. Mm. If you're not improving on yourself, there's no point of looking at others.
Mm. That's a very good point. And so in terms of where you see this sort of going in the next, I don't know, let's just say 2 years, where the industry is moving so quickly, do you see you talked that there are a lot of followers in this industry and a few vanguards. Do you see that shift of people who are now following and the momentum that's being built behind tech and these sorts of systems? Do you see that propelling what you're doing forward?
Yes, definitely. I think the last year, it has been almost a game changer. Mm. in 2015, you know, we were real estate software. As of 2017, we represent prop tech. And I know it's a fairly charged question when people say, well, should prop tech as a terminology exist? And I personally believe it should.
Oh.
Because the reason for that is the domain expertise for properties has to seep into technology. So it's not that technology for real estate has never existed. You have the Yardies of the world, you have MRI, you have Cube, you have multiple companies that have functioned in this. SAP can also do, you know, real estate or prop tech linked software, as we call it. But why is it that nobody really completely takes over the market? But that's because real estate is fairly local, one. So even if you think about it, your accounting softwares in, say, New York, there are certain market leaders. In London, there are certain market leaders because there are nuances to property. It's linked to regulation. It's linked to location. It's linked to market. So you have to look at property technology as its own industry. I think what it also does is it puts a massive challenge in front of tech companies. And especially when you're talking about scalability. So we are constantly thinking, as we put something in, does this work for this style of operation, this style of operation, this style? Every client we've been to has a different style of operating. And you have to start figuring out what are those permutations and combinations. Every client in a different city has different issues that they actually need to address. Generalizing for the property market is really hard. And you need somebody who's almost laser focused on just solving those. And which is why I think prop tech as an industry will probably last for a much longer time.
I'm sure that lots of people listening to that will feel very reassured. And in terms of the, we talked a bit about competition, and I think it's a slightly separate issue to talk about the noise that there is currently in the industry. That from the on the property side of the equation, there is definitely, you know, over the last year to 18 months, I think there's been a huge shift in acceptance of you know, technological advances and the need for digital transformation. The issue now is sort of collaborating with the right partners, cutting through the noise, knowing what to do next, knowing what those next steps are, knowing who is worth dealing with, and that relationship between the tech side and the property side of the equation. How have you found that as somebody who has a real estate background but is now operating a tech startup? Have you found that the relationship between the two quite difficult, or are you finding it a bit easier now to have those conversations?
You mean just speaking to the clients about technology or adoption?
That's a very good question. I'd say both. So first of all, speaking to the clients, and then we'll move on to the adoption.
So I think the speaking to the clients become really easy. Because it's quite simple. Everybody's had their year-end reviews where the targets now for pretty much everyone is the technology adoption. Eventually, it comes down to the culture of the company that you're speaking to. We've seen clients where tech is a checkbox. You need to show that in the year, financial year of 2017 or 18, you have actually looked at technology and adopted some. Whether it has real long-term value or not, maybe that's not something that's even a criteria. What we see is people putting things like, I just want it to be really easy for us to put onto our website, even though if it doesn't really bring real returns to you in any form or way, it's the ease of adoption because it allows them to give a checkbox. Where we find it interesting to talk to clients, and these are the clients who we really love, and I'm glad to say that we've had quite a handful of actually some of the larger players who have been engaging with us on this level, is where you really start having the conversation of, but what is your tech strategy for the future? What is your data strategy for the future? What is your 18-month plan? And what is your five-year plan? Because based on that, if you start using technology today, you have to reap the benefits in 18 months or 5 years. And if you're not looking at it from that perspective, you've just onboarded an old technology and assume that it's going to work for you 5 years from now. So that there are a few companies who have that future mindset and long-term mindset. There's also a few where they don't. They're just looking at you know, the checkboxes. So it really depends on which side of the equation the person you're in front, who's in front of you is. But in terms of having the conversation, I think it's really easy now. People are very, very open to having that conversation. Adoption, they're fine to try something new, but trying is not the same thing as making a change. And driving change is always hard.
And how do you help with the adoption side of things? I think that one of the issues that property companies are coming up against is that they are maybe not getting the guidance they need from the tech companies as to, you know, the long-term benefits and the adoption, but more maybe coming in, and this is a generalization, but maybe tech companies are coming in with a more sort of high level, that, you know, the tech side of it rather than the benefit side of it. I'd imagine that you, coming from a real estate background, you're probably a bit more in tune with how to, you know, pitch at the right level for the property companies.
Yeah, but I don't think it's about the pitch as well. It's also the product. Like, me coming from a real estate background, it's very, I think it helps to understand the pain. Because I've managed these properties. I've run construction. I've run renovation. I know where we used to spend the most amount of our time. I know where we used to get frustrated. It's not nice to take a call from an angry tenant. And keep your calm. In fact, you do want a bot to handle it who will be calm constantly. It doesn't matter what they're saying on the other end. So there's, I think that's really important even from a product perspective. And that's where I think we bring a little bit of a different, you know, viewpoint, because the product addresses the pain points first. And then we also creep a roadmap. And we're very, very transparent with anybody who's working with us. We are very transparent about what we can do and what we can't, but what is possible. And you're not just always pitching a product, and which is why I keep pushing this. We're pitching a vision where we want to help move the industry. It's not about, I want to make a sale. After having run a construction company, it's not that, you know, it was about, oh, let's go get a tech valuation. There was a real frustration about there wasn't enough change coming in the industry. And that's why we started the company. And I think that passion has to stay constantly. And that shows when we talk to our clients. Because it's not about today. It's about how do us, all of us as an industry, bring about a change which actually gives us a future that we're all looking forward to.
And when we're talking about that future we're looking forward to, I think that increasingly, as we've said a few times on this podcast, and not just on this Tech Talk Radio, but through other guests as well, we've talked a lot about that need for digital transformation and the excitement and the, you know, the vision. You'll have been asked this a lot, I imagine, like most people who are dealing with AI, is that there is, of course, the other flip side of the argument, and there is this fear of change and a fear of the unknown and a fear of human roles not being so needed when you have this incredible AI system that's remembering everything and is effectively, like you were saying, that very fast learning intern that's the data is stored. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, such a, you know, it's very difficult to argue that that is not the future and it is not a positive. So what do you say to the people who are sat there sort of thinking, well, what does that mean for us and our jobs and how we're going to go forward?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, people always assume that the future doesn't have new jobs for some reason. And that's not true. I mean, even though we're a little startup, we're starting to see roles which don't exist that we now need.
Such as?
A voice UX. For example, so a lot of the time, because we want it to be so easy to use, right? Coming back to adoption, Adam is really easy to use because it's how we do it now. You pick up the phone, you call up somebody, you're just calling up Adam. You text your property manager, you're just texting Adam. We don't even ask you to download an app. If you want to, you can, but it doesn't get in the way. Now, in order to make something that's seamless, you actually require a lot of roles in order to make that happen. And even within our organization, I don't think voice user experience was something that was really on top of our priority for somebody we need to hire. We didn't even know what that role, who that person would be, who we'd be hiring. What does that person's profile look like? And we're looking at philosophy students. So it's interesting because we
That's interesting. Philosophy students?
They have logic. So the way you look at looking at language, there's also, it's a flow between interaction as well as logic. I'm not saying we have this down. It's all work in progress. I don't know. I might come back next time and say that was a terrible idea. But it does mean that the future is also unforeseen, and the new roles that are going to come out are also unforeseen. Mm. There are some very interesting statistics, though, which I think people should start taking seriously. For example, what skill sets should we be picking up? Mm. Problem solving is never going to leave. Mm. We still have to problem solve. Yeah, we may not need to do math in our heads anymore, but it's the same as when you have a calculator. It's not that this is the first time it's happening. This has happened constantly, right? I mean, when the computer came in, when the internet came in, before that, when even the light bulb was invented, there's always change that technology brings. But that doesn't mean that suddenly everybody is going to have social unrest because of it. There's something new that comes from it. Mm. And I think that's what we should be exploring.
Mm. Very good point. We talk about that a lot, actually, as I said, and that's one of the best explanations I've heard. So I don't know if our listeners agree. I'm sure they will. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you, which is, you know, slightly separate in terms of us talking about Travitas, but it is an issue that has impacted a lot on, certainly across the board recently, due to the gender pay gap reporting. But we talk about property being an industry which is dominated by men, and tech, which is an industry which is dominated by men. And what happens when those two male-dominated industries collide, and you have prop tech? And we know from just the people that we come across in this sector that there are more men than women. You're not a man.
And I'm so glad you noticed.
And I wonder what your thoughts were on it. And in some ways, and I've said this to other women that we've had on this podcast, in some ways I hate asking the question because it feels like we should be at a point where we're not having to discuss it anymore. But yeah. I think, I don't know if you'd agree, that it is still something that needs discussing, and there is a way to go.
You know, this is a very loaded question. And I think I'm ambivalent right now, and I think a lot of us are going through this. Most women who are professionals want to believe that it doesn't matter, and we are able to cut through all of these glass ceilings, etc. But then also some of us have had the privilege of upbringing or education or just experience, which allows us to have that strength. I was told actually by... I used to be of the thought where I don't want to be on a panel that's only women entrepreneurs, because that means I'm not good enough to be just on an entrepreneur panel. Why should it be? Mm-hmm. And I was once told by a family friend when I was making this very loaded statement that it's not about you. It's about what you represent to others who don't have that. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time when I recognized that I was being very selfish in that, because I was making it about me. And that by putting myself as I'm good enough, and I wasn't thinking about all of those who need to look for that inspiration, you know, elsewhere. And I think going back to a little bit about being in the one industry where, well, real estate, construction and technology, which is, I don't know how this happened, but yes, I am in those industries. I have never felt that I didn't have something that the guys didn't. I've never felt that I wasn't treated right. In my professional career, I've actually had a fairly smooth sailing. The reason for that, I think, is something that probably requires more introspection from my side. But as long as I was delivering, I was getting the job done, as long as I understood what the work was, I don't think at any point I was being judged as a woman. But I think psychologically there must be something, because I named the bot Adam.
I was going to ask you about that.
And this has come up very often, because all the other bots are like Alexa or Siri or Lisa, or, like, you know, all of these female names.
Yeah.
And as much as I would like to say that, you know, it was a group decision, I think Adam was pretty much me. I definitely did say first property manager, first man, let's call him Adam. And I think psychologically that's because I felt very comfortable training a male bot who basically became my avatar in the world of property management and construction, where I felt like, okay, we can take on the world with this bot, because now there is none of that. You know, it's not about you. You represent yourself with this digital version of your brain, kind of. And then, of course, I think there must have been something psychological about that.
Did it ever cross your mind that it should be Eve?
No.
No, always Adam.
Yes, and I think that is something that at some point I'm probably going to have to introspect on. But I think that is because it does come from the bias that at the end of the day, if you want to get the job done in property or in construction, the chances are people will adopt Adam faster than Eve.
Wow.
And I think that is psychological. And I think that's because of the gender biases in society. Why else would I do that? But again, that just may be because I like the name. So it's, I think it's just such a complex issue. And I think it's not black and white. It's so gray. It comes with history and biases it comes with the biases of history, and it comes with the bias of culture too. Depends on which part of the world you're from, where gender is treated a certain way, even today. I think it's a very, very loaded discussion, which I think even most of us don't really know how to address.
Well, I think you've done a very good job of addressing it just then.
I'm still confused, so I'm definitely not making a statement out there saying I know what this means.
But it's great to have those different, to speak to people and get those opinions. And as I said, as I was asking you the question, often I don't like asking it. You know, as a woman myself operating in this industry, asking other women when you know a lot of the focus is on getting to a point where we're not having these discussions and where it, you know, things have got to that stage where it is just, you know, much more equal. I sometimes don't like asking, but it's so interesting to get people's perspectives on it. And, you know, it would be naive, I think, to assume that we're in a position where the conversation is over.
Yeah, no, and I think actually the conversation's been very helpful. The last year, of course, with all of the discussion that's been happening, it's good to actually have that out in the open. It obviously, I don't know which way you would go. Everyone has different opinions. And again, I personally still don't have a strong opinion on the matter. I'm still in a position where I want to hear all the different arguments that are being made. And then, of course, you have your own internal personal biases. But the fact that the communication is there and that we're able to talk about it and discuss it is definitely something that we should applaud, you know, the era we live in for.
Well, I can't think of a better point at which to end than on that very positive note. And but just one more question in terms of what people can expect from you, and if they want to get in touch with you about Travtus and about Adam or about you, how can they do that?
Well, they can always contact adam@travtus.com. I'm easily available on LinkedIn. You can just search me there. And our website, we're a small organization. You go out there at some point, I'll definitely hear about you.
Gypti, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
See what I mean? She's so cool.
It's very, very cool.
I think that what I love about Tech Talk Radio is that we've had so many people coming in from so many different perspectives, you know, whether they've come from the States, and we've had people from France, and we've had people from startups, we've had people from the developers, we've had people from the fund managers, and Tripti is another example of someone who's, you know, she's coming from the construction side, which is slightly different again. And as she said, she didn't mean to become a tech startup. She just suddenly found herself trying to solve that problem, And I think from lots of people we've spoken to, that is one of the best and most surefire ways to create a successful startup. If you're going in to solve a problem, and if it's a problem that you know exists in the way that she knew it exists because she was in construction, so much the better.
I think surely it's the only way to create a successful startup or business. If you're not solving a problem, then what's the point of you? Not just you, Emily, but
I'm problem solving all day long.
Did you mean solving or causing?
I meant both, frankly. I mean, I cause problems, but at least I fix them, you know, 90% of the time. And if I don't fix them, I have you to fix them for me. So that's why we work so well together. Oh, that was a bit mean. Just call you Sam the Fixer.
Sam the Fixer? What am I thinking
of? That's Bob the Builder.
Oh, yeah. Is it that time?
Yeah, I think it probably is. It's time to go.
Okay.
I've only had one coffee today.
I haven't. I've had more.
Well, then arguably you should be the one who's can't control their words and their words are running away from them. But as per usual, that appears to be me.
I'm going to help you out and say goodbye, Emily Wright.
Goodbye, Sam McClary.